latest in college esports from the students that play.
Go behind the scenes at the schools that game.
The only place where esports are
on campus.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Checkpoint XP on campus, your number one resource for collegiate esports. I am your host, Norris Howard, joined by the other two knuckleheads of the show, Jacob Brothers and Daniel Agbuya. How you guys doing today?
Living. How's it going, everybody?
Well, that is cool. You guys decided to drown each other out. Perfect. So, what we're going to open the show with is what we usually been opening the show with over the past few weeks, and that's the Overwatch Collegiate Cup. Now, UMG and Torque Esports put this bracket together in the wake of the coronavirus outbreak. They're able to put together a really amazing tournament that the University of Utah decided that nobody else should ever be entitled to do well in, and rolled throughout every bracket that they were present for outside of one. Now, eventually, they did go on to win this entire tournament in the last bracket last week. They walked away with the top prize, and no one is surprised. Literally, no one is surprised.
No. Yeah, no. I have nothing else to say.
Well, yeah, and
I thought it was a little interesting, at least.
It was, especially, you know, the first two maps, the Legion Tower map was pretty interesting, and then the second map, Dorado, was pretty interesting. But
second map was Blizzard World. Well, what it was is that Legion Tower and Blizzard World are UNLV's two best maps, and it came down to the final round in both of those maps. Yeah. And UNLV had played Dallas and just came off of a five game series versus Mississippi. So you could say that if UNLV's rested for that game, could have gone their way.
Are we about to bring that they didn't get enough rest?
The rest versus rust?
Argument.
I mean, if you come off of a five-game series,
it's a valid argument, to be fair. There's an argument to be made there.
Because Utah did not play one good team until the final round.
Okay, we could talk about the quality of opponent. Absolutely, I agree with you. Because then they open up against, who is it, Wichita?
CU Boulder and then Wichita.
CU Boulder and then Wichita. The bottom of the barrel, which happens when you're the number one
seeding. Yeah,
that's seeding. But I agree with you. UNLV having to go through UT Dallas and then also having to go through Mississippi State is very, very tough. But at this point, I mean, I don't know. That's a very interesting argument. But eventually Utah did end up winning out. With Cool ABC switching between the May and the Echo and stuff like that. Now, I will say that UNLV's Wild Wing bat on the Echo was very, very effective.
It was a fair match.
Especially on that Blizzard World map. He was on fire during that map. But Utah eventually did win out. But we've said all the superlatives about the University of Utah. I think, you know, what is you guys' opinion on just the event as a whole? Because for me, I would have loved to have the same teams every week and not having a situation where you have a UT Dallas that we saw for three out of the, you know, 8 weeks that I really didn't get a bead on what they really are as a team. You know, I only got a taste of them.
I would have loved to have seen how far Utah would have gotten if, say, Maryville and Harrisburg were in the brackets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, outside of scheduling, this event was the best collegiate Overwatch event, period. Because yes. If you look at TESPA's and then come back to this, it is not even in the same stratosphere. And outside of just, there was only two really good teams, and then the other good team hardly got to play. Outside of those asterisks, Collegiate Clash should come back better than ever next time.
I agree with you. And I think bringing Collegiate Clash back, you know, Daniel, with some of those more, you know, those bigger teams, especially the teams from the East Coast, I would love to see not just Maryville, Harrisburg, Northeastern, Boston College, some of those other teams out there on the East Coast that are really good at Overwatch that could definitely use some shine right now. But I had a conversation with the University of Utah's Cool ABC in the wake of their big win, and here is that conversation right now. Welcome back to Checkpoint XP on Campus, your number one resource for collegiate esports. And we are here with, at this point now, we can consider him a friend of the show, Austin Cool ABC Walsh from the University of Utah. They have just won the Overwatch Collegiate Clash. They were far and away the best team involved in the bracket. And these guys have done a great job all spring long in dominating that bracket. So Cool ABC, welcome to the show once more.
Hey guys, thanks for having me.
Yeah, so you know, obviously you guys won out that tournament, so number one, how do you feel about it, and you know, what do you think you guys were able to do in order to come out on top?
It always feels good to win, you know, come out on top, and I, you know, I love competing in the tournaments. I think just the practice that we put in every week really is what puts us on top.
Yeah, and you know, last time we talked to you, you talked a lot about the practice and about you guys' team camaraderie, and you as the shot caller, you know, almost in that sort of on the field captain role, letting everybody know where they're supposed to be and what they're supposed to be doing. You guys were able to go through this entire tournament, 8 weeks of competition, and drop only one weekend that you guys played in, including the championship weekend, obviously. Is the practice the main factor in that consistency, or was it just the fact that you guys were that much better?
I think a little bit of both. I think we do put in a lot of practice, probably more than most teams do. And then as well, we've been playing together for so long that it just comes a lot more naturally to us, where a lot of these teams, this is their first year together. But, and then also, we're all just really good players, and we all got together and, you know, luckily all went to the same school.
Yeah, that's awesome. And so the one team that was able to give you guys a little bit of a run for your money was UNLV. Do you consider UNLV to be the best of that competition there, or who do you see emerging besides yourselves as a school that perhaps could make some noise if they put a little more effort into the program?
Yeah, I think UNLV was definitely at least top three. I think UT Dallas was also up there really well. They weren't in the original eight, but I saw they put UNLV up and they beat them, I think, once. And so I think those would definitely be the top two teams besides us in the bracket.
Yeah, and you know, getting back to you, one thing that we saw you play mostly was the May throughout most of those weeks. And in recent weeks, we saw you not necessarily playing as much May as you usually do. You know, what went into that swap? Was it that Echo coming into the meta, or was it just that you guys were feeling more comfortable on different champions?
So there were two big things. So one, Echo was introduced, you know, a flying hero. She's pretty good. Her ult's really good and she has a lot of damage. And then another thing is they just put through a patch that nerfed most CC across the game. So CC being like crowd control, so like Maze Freeze got a big nerf. And so overall, they've just been slowly nerfing the hero as, you know, the tournament's gone on. So I had to make the shift over to start playing the Echo, the Hanzo, the Reaper more.
Yeah, and that was something that I found very interesting just about you guys, especially in that championship weekend, is that seeing you on the Echo where, you know, you pretty much went head up against Wild Wingbat from UNLV in that finals match, in that grand final. It was a very, very interesting matchup to see Echo v Echo. Something that, of course, we're seeing a lot in the upper tiers of play, but it was a very entertaining match between you guys, and it was really fun to watch. We're sitting here with Cool ABC of the University of Utah. They've just won the Overwatch Collegiate Cup last week, and we decided to definitely get back in touch with them. So staying on the topic of Echo, as a player in the upper echelons of play, you know, is Echo to the point right now where she is a must pick, or, you know, you must be planning your approach around the Echo right now?
As of right now, I'd say no. I think as a new hero always comes out, there's a lot of room for people to start learning the hero, and you need to start improving and learning how she plays. Right now, I think there are a lot of good heroes. She's definitely up there in the S tier, A tier type category with a lot of the other, you know, there's probably like 5 or 6 DPS that are all up there right now. And so you can play any of the combinations together, and they're all like really good comps. But I don't think she's a must pick. You can definitely win games. The tournament I played in yesterday, Echo wasn't even like really played in the final matches. It was all the Kreme, the Kreator, all the hard spam comps.
So staying on Heroes, you had a ton of really awesome Doomfist, you know, clone plays while playing on Echo. And sometimes you picked Orisa. Now, usually when we see Echo clone, it's usually going to more of a, you know, impact tank or off tank, if you will. Usually we see the Sigma a lot of times. Other times you may even see the Winston picked. What was going into your calculus in picking the Orisa when you had to clone off the Echo?
So Orisa is actually the biggest impact tank in the game. I think that's almost undisputed across, you know, the higher levels of play. But she's super silent impact, so it's no flashy plays. It's all, you put your shield, you shoot, you get your bongo off, you halt off. All the abilities just are really big and high impact. But you don't see any flashy plays. You don't see any 6Ks. You don't see any, you know, juggles off the map. Nothing like that. But Orisa is just one of the best, and having two of them on a team is really good for a team fight.
Yeah, and so I'm going to just put that out there to everybody who is in, like, silver and gold, who just thinks, oh, man, if I just switch Orisa to the, you know, switch Echo to the Reaper, I'm going to get a 6K and make the play of the game. No, it's about winning the game, so sometimes mm-hmm. you may need to pick the Orisa. The last thing I want to talk to you about is, you know, moving forward, we've seen how this bracket worked out. And for me as a consumer and for many of us, we found this tournament to be incredibly interesting and very easy to follow. As a player, would you like to see more of these styles of events where there's sort of these kind of 6 or 8 week long brackets where only select teams are participating, or would you guys like to see a more, you know, semester long competition where you may have to play the same team 2 or 3 times and then have a final playoff?
I thought this like this format was pretty good. I thought it had the kind of one flaw, because like as the team who won most weeks, we recognize that it's not exactly fair for the others, especially just because like the skill differentials in collegiate is always, you know, different. Somebody actually brought it up to me and said that they thought the winner from 1 week shouldn't get a play for the rest of the weeks, and then they get their spot in the final 8 in the final tournament. And I thought that was a really good change that they could make. So like if you win week 1, you're out until the finals. And then that gives everybody who's, you know, the top 8 will get into the final.
It's very interesting. I actually think that's a really cool idea. And hopefully, you know, UMG or Torque Esports or Testbor, whoever is listening to that, because I think that's a phenomenal idea. And that is coming from one of your players, guys. So make sure you're listening to that player base. Cool ABC from the University of Utah has been our guest today. Thank you so much for joining us. It's always great to talk to you. You always have the best insights on collegiate Overwatch, and we look forward to seeing the University of Utah have even more success in the future.
Thanks so much.
We're going to have more coming up on Checkpoint XP on campus, so make sure you guys stick around.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Hey, it's Weird Beard from Checkpoint XP reminding you to make it blue. Help say thank you to our heroes on the front lines of the COVID-19 pandemic. Whether you're streaming, drawing, singing, cooking, or anything else, showcase your talents and hashtag light it blue. You can find more information at our website, checkpointxp.com.
Welcome back to Checkpoint XP on campus, your number one resource for collegiate esports and the world beyond. Your host, Norris Howard, here. And don't forget to slide over to our website, checkpointxp.com, where you can find all of our cool news stories, as well as a repository of all of our shows, from The Other Identity about comic books to Checkpoint XP, the radio show, as well as all of the other great offerings that we have. So again, make sure you head over to checkpointxp.com for more. Now, we have a very special guest here with us on the show this week. His name is Christopher Pollack. He's the man in charge at the University of Alabama's esports program. That's right, y'all. Roll Tide. The University of Alabama is in the house. Christopher, thank you for joining us today.
Of course, of course. Thank you guys for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, so before we get too heavy into how things are at the University of Alabama, talk a little bit to us about you and how you got started in gaming and what led you to your position at the university.
Gotcha. Well, I think I kind of have that traditional story of gaming where I started when I was really young and I fell in love with it since for as long as I can remember, I've been in love with playing video games. It's always been a part of my life. I bounced around before I went to the University of Alabama working for different esports organizations that were in the Call of Duty amateur scene. And then I found myself transferring to the University of Alabama, and I instantly looked up if they had an esports program going on, and I instantly got in touch with them and got in their Discord, just started talking with everybody that was in there, made a bunch of friends, started school, and it just kept going from there. And I was the student advisor last year, and now I am the vice president of the club going into the next semester.
Awesome. And just so everybody knows out there, you guys are a club team, right? You're not a varsity level team.
We have not been pushed up to the varsity level yet. We are we're an official school sponsored club sport.
Awesome. And we, you know, we cover it all because we want to make sure that people understand that the college esports scene is very malleable, and it's kind of shifting right now. And not every school, including a large schools like the University of Alabama, have even really moved esports up to that level yet. So we want to make sure that all teams of all levels are represented. With that said, what games do you guys participate in, you know, and you know, how are you guys able to field the number of teams that you do?
Oh, man, we have pretty much a team in every competitive game you can think of. If we don't have it, we're working towards getting it. If it's all about who's in our club and who and where they want to compete, we try to field as many teams as we possibly can.
But how many members do you guys have right now?
Active members, I would say about 300. Wow. I know in our server we have almost 800 people that are in there, but that's not like a good number of who's actually active and stuff like that.
Have you guys barked up that Valorant tree yet, or are you guys still waiting to pull the trigger on that?
We have a team set in the beta right now, but we'll get another tryout going and a full team set once the game fully comes out. But yeah, we have a team for the beta right now, and we're trying to get them in tournaments and just see where it goes.
Awesome. And so, you know, you talk about the sheer size of your club. Is that an advantage from being at such a big state school, you think? Whereas, you know, we talk to a lot of smaller schools and even some private schools where, you know, the esports team is 20 people, you know, including the coaching staff. What advantages come with being a part of a large state school and having an esports program?
Being a part of a big state school and having the esports program is really big for us. It gives us a lot bigger, that's a bad wording for it, but it gives us a bigger range of people we can go to get in the club and to get support. So whenever we do like a social media campaign, we have so much support that it kind of beats out all of the sororities and fraternities that are on our campus, which is huge for us. And it definitely helps. I can't complain about being at a big state school.
Yeah, we're talking to Christopher Pollack. He is the man in charge of the University of Alabama esports club, or esports team, I should say, rather. And, you know, I really was curious more so about, the fact that University of Alabama is absolutely known nationwide for its football program, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
It is a legacy football program. It is something that has been around for many, many years. And over the past 20 years in particular, has really reached to the level almost, you know, eclipsing some NFL teams in terms of its popularity. By having such a behemoth of traditional sports on the exact same campus as you, do you find it more difficult to be able to go to the faculty, to be able to go to the university itself and talk about esports? Or is it a little bit more wiggle room for you guys because they kind of understand everything competitive?
I think towards the top end of the totem pole at our school, it's kind of more of the traditional Southern man's football, contact sports, what is a video game kind of like knowledge. But as far as with our club dealing directly with our, like our school's faculty advisors and stuff like that, they've been a tremendous amount of help to us. And they're working every day towards getting us to where we can be on a pedestal, just like that football team is. And that's the only thing we can kind of ask for at this point. We're always going to struggle with that big, you know, Southern football mentality, but it's just something we got to work around, and we're working our as best as we can to get our name out there to everybody on campus and outward.
Yeah, and go ahead, Jacob.
So how are your turnouts when you actually do matches? Because we've seen a lot of, like, say, the Mountain West Conference. They're like, we're doing a game, and it has, like, five people in there. For Alabama being as big of a school as it is, and you've mentioned how social media-wise you guys turn out pretty well, during your actual matches, are you getting, like, a lot of engagement in your chat or anything like that?
We average about 30 viewers per stream, I would say, depending on the game that we're playing. Like, obviously, some games are more popular than others. I know for one of our Call of Duty streams that we had during this CCL league, we had, I think, we went to like 78 viewers for the one stream that we had, and that was huge for us, just to get that many eyes on us.
The COD league has done really well, so that's a good game to get traction for.
Hey man, I started that Call of Duty team here on campus. I take a lot of pride.
We're nice. All good job.
That's what's up, man. And I got
one more question, actually.
Go ahead, sorry. Please.
Well, obviously, you know, collegiate esports is something that's, you know, it's practically a new frontier. There's no really set ground rules of it. With a school like Alabama, and not just Alabama, but the SEC, with the future of college esports, do you think the idea of like having these like big conferences, like have the SEC esports conference, do you think that's something kind of necessary for esports to really take a huge like groundswell in the collegiate scene?
I don't think it's something that's necessary, but I think it's something that could really help us in the long run. Since there are already those standing conferences with everybody already knowing who those teams are, it might help those big schools get a like bigger advantage in the scene. For instance, for most of the school year, we have been talking with a lot of the SEC schools about getting a possible tournament down the road going with just the SEC teams, like a tournament that's a LAN. And I think it'd be a great opportunity for all of us, but it just comes down to everybody getting there, you know?
Yeah. And so I have a sort of a follow-up question to that before we split, is that, you know, with that said, some of the biggest esports teams in the country are not necessarily from teams who are from those power conferences. They're not necessarily SEC or ACC or Big Ten or Big 12 schools. They may be Mid-Atlantic schools. They may be schools who are D2 in every other sport that they participate in. So with the big conferences, you know, maybe looking at esports in the future, do you think that they may have to think about allowing different schools into their conference just for esports, or do you think that it'll be closed off to just the schools that are already there?
I think looking at that perspective would be way down the line from where we are right now in the collegiate scene. I don't even see us setting up conferences anytime soon unless you're on the West Coast in those schools. Like UCI has a huge program going right now, but I think it's also a way to look at the schools that don't have other huge sports, they're able to funnel more money into new programs. And that's the thing that we're kind of dealing with, is like our football program gives so much of that funding that we're kind of left on the back end. And it could also be looked at a different way, is like in our SEC, let's say LSU moves to a varsity sport, we could then take that to the president and be like, hey, why aren't we a varsity sport? They're a varsity sport. Let's be competitive and let's move that way up.
Yeah. Yeah. They're only gonna notice the competitive aspect of it and say, oh, we want to beat LSU and everything. So
always got to be number one.
Yeah, absolutely. Christopher Pollack of the University of Alabama, thank you for joining us so much on Checkpoint XP on campus. If people want to find information about you and information about Alabama's esports program, where can they find it?
They can find me on Twitter at Start of the Berry. That's pretty much the only social media I've been using as of late.
Yeah. Awesome, awesome, awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us. And we're going to have more coming up where Weird Beard is going to be quizzing us on some games that are old, but may not necessarily feel like it. We're going to have more with that next coming up on Checkpoint XP on campus. Stick around.
Hello, everyone. I'm Diane from Checkpoint XP on campus, and it's Asian Pacific American Heritage Month. Today, we are shining a spotlight on Japanese game designer Katsuya Iguchi. He is a senior producer and deputy general manager at Nintendo and has worked on popular games like Super Mario Bros., Super Smash Bros., Animal Crossing, and many others. In 1986, when he was 21 years old, he moved to Kyoto to work for Nintendo. Feeling lonely and isolated, something we can all relate to right now, he was inspired to create the game Animal Crossing. We thank Katsuya for having such an impact on the gaming industry.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Welcome back to Checkpoint XP on campus. Now, we usually do something fun for our last segment when we were in the studio, but we're not in the studio, so we stopped having fun. So we decided to bring some of that fun back to the show because we are really bored at home, and we decided to just jazz it up a little. So our producer, Weird Beard, is going to help us out with a game in which everybody needs to keep their hands visible, okay? No searching on the computer for this. And on top of that, we have Kevin Kelly joining us, who is also graduating this year. So congratulations Kevin Kelly. But he's going to help us out still with this one. And I mean it, guys.
Just so you know, there's no money riding on this. So Kevin's not doing this as a degenerate.
I was about to say.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know about you. I don't know. I already played some sad bets. But anyway, Weird Beard, help us with the game.
So in this game, I need you to guess which game is the oldest game. I'm going to give you two. You have to decide amongst yourselves as a group which game is the oldest possible game. We're going to start with two classics, the Oregon Trail or Pong.
Cool. It's got to be Pong,
absolutely
Pong.
That's Pong.
It's a starter question.
It went to an asteroids kind of game, to a janky tennis game, to Pong.
Yeah.
That's the early history of video games.
Pong. Norris.
It was way before the personal computer, so it has to be before Oregon Trail.
Yeah, Pong. I will say that will be our final answer. Weird Beer Pong.
Unfortunately, you're incorrect. It is the Oregon
Trail. No way.
A year before Pong did.
What was it? Just like HTML script?
Was it on a piece of paper?
Yeah.
We are not counting kind of paper games.
Nope. Not listening to you guys anymore. All right.
Next question.
You agreed with us.
Time to go on Google later.
Donkey Kong or Pac-Man?
Donkey Kong. Pac-Man. No.
fans. I'm not going to say
it's 1980 and 1981. Those are the two dates. But
yeah, those are the years.
Pac-Man is 1980.
I want to say Pac-Man. Like Pac-Man was in the arcades before, way before Donkey Kong, because I remember Pac-Man Fever.
Not way. It's 1 year.
All right, listen. I'm just gonna say Pac-Man.
I think it's Pac-Man.
I'm gonna say Pac-Man too.
Yeah,
Jacob, we got
Puckman is correct. That is the old.
Yes, Paku Paku Man.
Because Donkey Kong's 81, right?
Yes, you're right.
Yeah.
Next question.
That's my favorite piece of. Before we move on, that was my favorite piece of Scott Pilgrim versus the World. Trivia. That it used to be called Puckman, but people would scratch off the P and turn it into an F.
I did not know.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's the one piece of Pac-Man trivia I know.
Which game is older, Resident Evil 4 or Gears of War?
Oh, RE4.
RE4.
Yeah,
I would say
RE4.
Yeah, GameCube.
Yeah.
Because Gears was on the original 360, right?
Yeah, 360. And RE2 was on the GameCube.
RE4 was on GameCube.
Mm-hmm. I mean, RE4 was on GameCube, sorry.
I cannot stump the chumps. Resident Evil 4 is the older game.
Ooh. That's right. That's right.
Next question. Uncharted 2 or Red Dead Redemption?
Uncharted 2 was in 2009, I think.
Red Dead Redemption definitely has the jankier setup from what I remember.
No, but Red Dead Redemption was the last big game on PS3.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
it was the last game on PS3.
It was like Red Dead Redemption, and then The Last of Us, and that was it.
Red Dead Redemption's older than that.
Yeah, it's way older than The Last of Us. Red Dead Redemption was like mid generation.
That was, I guess, around 2008, 2009.
Anyway, we got to pick one, so I'm gonna say. What's older, Red Dead Redemption? I think Uncharted 2.
I think Red Dead.
Oh, no.
Yeah, the majority rules. I think we have to go with majority rules in this case. Unless we can convince Jacob otherwise.
I mean, I don't know. So if you guys think a majority is Uncharted 2, go with Uncharted 2.
Majority, I'm going to just... No, I'm vetoing. We don't go with Uncharted 2.
Man, sometimes you just got to listen to the guy in the charge. Uncharted 2 is the correct answer.
Let's go.
Hey, I said that. I said that.
Good job.
Next answer.
Are you?
Super Smash. You fronting
like I wasn't there or something.
Super Smash Brothers or The Sims?
Super Smash Brothers was 1996.
Yeah, and
look at Jacob over here.
And The Sims, I think The Sims was 99, so we don't go with Smash.
It was either 99 or 2000. Yeah. So
Smash, I gotta go with Smash.
Make sure to edge guard. Super Smash Brothers is the correct answer.
Okay.
All right. All right. So Weird Beard, we got time for one more. Let's do one more.
Oh, spicy okay. one.
Give it a
Super Mario Brothers 3 or Final Fantasy?
Sidebar. Are we counting Western releases?
Yes.
No. Okay. No.
There's those people who will ask that question.
Final Fantasy released on
Final
what?
Final Fantasy.
NES.
NES. Yeah.
It's Final Fantasy.
It's Final Fantasy because Mario 3 looks better.
Yeah. It's Final Fantasy because Final Fantasy came out in 87.
Did it really?
And Mario Brothers 1 came out, I think, in 86.
85,
yeah.
2 years is a long time. Are you sure that you want to stick with what you want?
I think it's Final Fantasy.
I still think it's
Final Fantasy. I got to say Final Fantasy.
You guys have the gut feeling. Final Fantasy is correct. You are
listen. Weird Bear tried to come in from on high and stump us. He fooled us in the first one, but we got it back together and we figured it out. But that's gonna be
look
it
at that last one.
For the shut up. You're wrong. It was Final Fantasy. Anyway.
No. That's the first one I meant.
That's gonna be it for the show. That's gonna be it for this week's Checkpoint XP on Campus. We want to thank everybody involved with the show, including all of the faculty and editing staff that help us out with creating the show every week, as well as all of our B team. And I'm not saying that to relegate them. I'm saying that because these guys don't appear on camera unless I twist their arm. But we thank them for all the cool stuff that they do helping us out behind the scenes. And to Weird Beard for helping us with all of our visuals and clearly administering games. And Kevin Kelly also for being a guest star this week. But we hope and demand that you return for next week's Checkpoint XP on Campus. Take it easy.
Take care of yourselves and have a damn good time.
Love you.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.